It's 7:43. I'm Teresa Wills. It's election season, and here in West Virginia, that used to mean everyone and their dead brother was casting a vote.
By 1968, it was discovered that in 33 of the 55 counties of the state, the registered voters outnumbered the eligible voters.
Have times changed? We'll talk with a historian about voter fraud. That's coming up on West Virginia Morning. Cases of the coronavirus are trending up in the Eastern Panhandle. As Liz McCormick reports, Berkeley County has seen an increase of 19 confirmed positive COVID-19 cases in the past 2 days.
Berkeley County's total number of positive cases as of Thursday evening is 322 with 14 probable cases, according to the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources. Berkeley has the highest number of positive cases in the state. Speaking at a press briefing Thursday, Governor Jim Justice said state officials are closely watching the situation in the Eastern Panhandle.
Berkeley, Jefferson, Morgan counties are counties that we're watching nonstop. You know, they're probably the most exposed counties from the standpoint of all the stuff from D.C. to Virginia, you know, in that area.
Also in Thursday's presser, State Health Officer Dr. Kathy Slemp said while the numbers are higher in Berkeley County, the percent positivity of cases is staying fairly consistent.
What we're looking at in these settings is both the level of disease and trends or changes in disease. So we're seeing lots of higher level of disease, but it's been staying kind of steady along that path.
But despite the increase, the state is moving forward with reopening plans. On Friday, casinos and movie theaters are set to reopen statewide. Dr. Terrence Reedy is the health officer for the Berkeley Morgan County Health Department and the Jefferson County Health Department. He said in an interview over Skype that for the past few weeks, Berkeley County on average sees about 25 new cases each week. But recently that's increased to between 40 and 50 a week.
The hope had been that people would have understood by this point what they need to do to decrease the risk of infection. And we're seeing that that's not happening. We're seeing it both in the numbers of the rising cases and the activities of people getting together and not doing the social distancing or wearing the masks, the simple things that do make a difference.
He cautions entities in the Eastern Panhandle to slow down in reopening and be mindful. He says just because they can open doesn't necessarily mean they should yet.
There are some things that are legal, such as you can go buy and drink a fifth of whiskey a day. It's legal. It's bad advice, and it's certainly bad health.
The governor's office has made no announcement at this time whether to slow reopening in the Eastern Panhandle region. Berkeley and Jefferson counties do remain on high alert for the coronavirus. At least 79 people in West Virginia have died from the virus and 2,100 have tested positive, according to state health officials Thursday evening. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Martinsburg.
Across the country, thousands of registered voters are opting to fill out absentee ballots to avoid in-person voting during a pandemic. While experts say widespread absentee voting could be slightly more susceptible to fraud, most studies have shown voting fraud is, in fact, very rare. However, here in West Virginia, there's a rich Wild West-like history of shenanigans. We asked a historian to help put this moment in context. Glynis Board spoke with West Virginia University professor Hal Gorby.
What can you tell us about the history of voter fraud throughout West Virginia?
Fraud has been a practice or an issue really since the 19th century. It really kind of falls into three categories. The first is one that's more of a cultural development that existed out of the Virginia style of politics that developed in the early to mid 19th century, where the nature of voting itself was part of cultural events and celebrations. Voting was done in public. There's no idea that voting is being done in a private space. Then with the development of the coal industry, you have this new development come about because of the nature of the coal company town system, where absentee corporations, through influencing local politicians and, you know, local business officials who often fell into both worlds, part of that strict control that existed was also often in election seasons passing out slate ballots that were already filled out for miners who worked for a particular company. And through oral history, through even some of their own letters and documentation, we know that they are keeping track of how people are voting. Now, how does a coal baron know the total number of votes cast for candidates? You know, that would be something that the Secretary of State or the county clerk should know. How does this person know that? Well, they know it because it's controlled. So I think it also gets into the fact that in many of those southern counties, the coal barons or people affiliated with the coal industry in those counties are also elected officials. So Logan County Sheriff Don Chafin, for example, you know, the control he has in the county would also carry over to control, you know, in the county clerk's office. And often, you know, people that are county clerks, tax assessors are either somehow directly connected to the coal industry in that county, or they have, I mean, I'll just say it, they've been bought off.
Well, and then I know that we had a Secretary of State, Ken Heckler, who came in and made some really big changes to try and curb some of that fraud, especially around voting and around the ballot box and things of that nature. Can you speak at all to the changes that happened then and whether or not they've had lasting impacts on that culture?
Well, actually, it even predates Ken Heckler. From 1950 to 1960, the state lost 7.2% of its population, but gained in voters 2.4%. So, okay, well, that doesn't make any sense. And you start seeing in some of these counties and the data that these anti-poverty workers find show all kinds of abuses, more so now by county clerks, by local and county officials in basically controlling who gets to run for office, who is going to win, what's the outcome going to be. The earlier Secretary of State who comes in 1968, Jay Rockefeller, who's sort of a supporter of many of these anti-poverty efforts at the time, one of the big things he hits upon in his race for Secretary of State is to stop the dead people from voting. By 1968, it was discovered that in 33 of the 55 counties of the state, the registered voters outnumbered the eligible voters. And that was found after he became Secretary of State and started having a thorough investigation of every county's books. They were finding that people were not removing people once they died. There were people who had left the state in the 1950s and early 60s who were still being listed and somehow were even being listed as voting in 1964, 1966, and 1968. One of the easiest ways these county political machines would try to fraudulently mess up the voting process is they would encourage large numbers of people to vote early and vote absentee. And at that time, they would have to file that they were not going to be in the county on election day. They would sort of fill out an affidavit for this, and then they would be allowed to vote absentee. They found in Mingo County in 1964, 25% of all the ballots cast were cast in this way.
We have a very strange voting scenario happening right now because of the coronavirus pandemic. And, you know, we have a lot of people voting by absentee ballot. And I just wonder, you know, based on your knowledge of the history of the state, do you think we've created a scenario that's fraught for corruption, or do you have confidence in the system in place?
I am very concerned. And that's not only historical basis to draw from for that. I do worry about a mail-in only process. You know, things can get lost in the mail. Again, it's point A, the person voting, to point B, to point C. Do those ballots actually make their way to the county courthouse? You know, it's taking away what had become a very scientific individual process and kind of opening it up back again to some of the older sort of traditions we've seen in the way voting has happened in the state. So I also worry that then this is going to lead to people on either side saying, well, the election was fraudulent, so we can't really trust the outcome. The flip side might be they might actually have an increase in voter turnout. because people, you know, actually feel like they can do this at home. I think it's just going to raise a lot of questions for people to report on. Unfortunately, we won't learn until afterwards. So to see, well, what was the voter turnout, you know, in the last few elections? How was it different this time?
That was WVU history professor Hal Gorby speaking with Glennis Board. You can find more election coverage on our website, wvpublic.org. Our Mountain Stage Song of the Week comes from Wynonna Judd and her band The Big Noise. Here they are in 2016 on the Mountain Stage performing the powerful and uplifting song of gratitude, Things That I Lean On.
They say it's a journey, not a destination. It's been a long road, my friend.
I'm 23 when I'm scared to death. A sleeping pill when my mind won't rest. A little BB King when the thrill is gone. These are the things that I lean on. God's grace when I'm walking on a dangerous path. 12 steps when I need to find my way. Are the things that I lean on. When I've done something sorry that I can't undo, the devil's given me another talking to. When the spirit's weak and the body's weak, a fine line separating right from wrong. It ought to be obvious as all the cone. These are the things that I lean on. Uh-huh. A child when I can't believe. The timeless soul of a Conway song. These are the things that I lean on. I've done something sorry that I can't undo. The devil's given me another talking to. The spirit's weak and the body's weak. A fine line separating right from wrong. It ought to be all. These are the things that I lean on. Uh-huh.
These are the things that I lean on.
Shoulder of a man who's steady and strong. 12 steps and the 23rd. These are the things that I lean on. These are the things that I lean on. These are the things that I lean on.
That was Wynonna Judd singing our Mountain Stage Song of the Week, Things That I Lean On. You can hear more this Friday and Saturday nights at 8 right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our Appalachia Health News Project is made possible with support from CAMC and Marshall Health. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Caitlin Tan, Jessica Lilly, Carol Lofton, Liz McCormick, Dave Mistich, Eric Douglas, Corey Nollinger, Emily Allen, and Roxy Todd. Brittany Patterson produces our show. Our news director is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.